Good morning. How many of us would rather be outraged than informed? That was the question with which the NPR announcer concluded an item yesterday about a video that went viral last week. I have to admit, I do not like that term viral. I don't like it that it has entered the English language and what it denotes, but it has become part of our daily vocabulary about usually stupid and misleading videos that people take and then post on YouTube and Facebook and all other so-called social media that are increasingly infringing on our lives and the quality of our lives. Anyway, this particular video, and you can go online and find it for yourselves, this particular video shows a man at Chicago's Wrigley Field snatching a baseball that a player had tossed to a little boy sitting in front of this man. Of course, it went viral and outraged countless people who immediately rushed to judgment against this man. But the story was not what it appeared in that short video. And after explaining what actually happened in this particular incident at Wrigley Field, the question was posed, how many of those who were outraged ever actually learn the truth behind that incident? Hence the remark by the NPR announcer, how many of us would rather be outraged than informed? It is easy to be outraged, much harder to be informed in our day. When a majority of people get their news from social media of questionable truthfulness rather than from reputable news sources. People even talk about fake news, and that's another thing that has terrible term that has entered our vocabulary, which makes people lose trust in everything. Not a good thing for democracy. But I wonder what viral videos would have been made of Jesus if there was YouTube and Facebook in his days. How most of the things that he did and said would have been labeled fake news by the religious and political leaders of that time. And of course, they were treated as fake news, to use that modern term. He was treated as a fake. He was labeled a blasphemer, a heretic, a danger to the country, to the state, to the religion, to the Roman Empire. Is it any wonder that Jesus avoided as much as possible doing miracles out in the open, in public? He really did. How often in the Gospels we read that he even resented being called upon to perform miracles, and even said, how long am I going to abide with this adulterous generation who are always looking for signs, for miracles? His words, not mine. Even last week's huge miraculous feeding of thousands of people was done as quietly as possible, considering what an extraordinary miracle that is. To take five loaves and two fish and to multiply, I wonder, were the fish fried? Were they grilled? I don't know. The gospel doesn't really tell us many details about that. Maybe they were already cooked. Maybe they made sushi. We're not given details because the issue was not the miracle itself. We are not to pay attention to the miracle itself, but what the miracle communicates to us, and that's what I focused on last week, at least in one respect. How many of those who were fed really saw what was going on and how they were being given food as the evening drew near? How many really understood that there was a miracle taking place right there? And it wasn't just bread that materialized from the ground or that was dropped from heaven. I wonder what a viral video would have shown in those days. His own disciples had trouble separating truth from falsehood. They see Jesus walking on the water in the middle of the night, in the middle of a storm, and they start screaming that it's a ghost. But he's not outraged at their reaction. He's not outraged the way we are outraged. He's calm. He understands that people have trouble believing their own eyes, and they come to trust the eyes of others. So he calms them. Don't be afraid. It is I. Take heart. Be brave. Don't be cowards. There are many storms in life. How easily do we lose heart? How easily do we forget the one who is with us, giving us courage, who walks into the middle of our own storms of life? Did you notice? He didn't calm the storm right away. As a matter of fact, he invited Peter to walk to him on the water, in that stormy sea, in the middle of that storm. God does not take all our pains away. God does not magically dispel all the storms in our lives. The way of God is the way of Jesus. And Jesus prefers to walk with us in the middle of the storms that we face. And together with him, we might find the strength and the wisdom to deal with the storms. We believe in a Jesus who is in heaven, and he's surely there, ascended to the Father after his resurrection. But he is also here with us in the middle of every storm and every joy in our lives. And that is the message I get this weekend from this gospel reading. Did you notice how this reading today began? It just continued after the feeding of the 5,000. He dismisses the crowds, and then he sends his disciples away. He tells them, okay, now get in the boat and cross on the other side of the lake. But he does not join them. He goes up on a hill to pray. He goes up on a hill to pray alone in solitude. Jesus always prayed in solitude. He always went aside, usually up on a hill or in a desert place, to be by himself to pray. He made no public showing of prayer. As a matter of fact, he criticized the Pharisees for making a public showing of their prayer. I think he might have trouble with some people today who join hands and pray in restaurants and other public places, but that's for him to deal with. Jesus prayed in solitude. He went up on the hill. He prayed, but he didn't stay there. He came down to where his disciples were fighting the storm. And so he prays for us today. The Bible calls him, the Epistle to the Hebrews calls him, our great high priest. But a priest does not only pray for the people who are entrusted to his care, to his spiritual care. The priest is also there with the people that he is praying for. How much more, how infinitely, infinitely more true than that, more true than that, is our great high priest, our Lord Jesus Christ. Anything that a priest is, including myself, Jesus is infinitely more than anything that an earthly priest can be. And so if an earthly priest prays for people and is also there with people in their suffering, in their struggles, how much more our great high priest? He came to the disciples in the midst of the storm, and he comes to us, not necessarily to drive away the storm, but to walk with us and to bid us to come with him, to him in the middle of the storm, in the middle of our fears and our struggles. Because he's not just God in heaven. He is God with us, Emmanuel. Emmanuel is his name, is his prophetic name. And it means in Hebrew, God with us. That is his name. Do not forget it.